Y'all heard, come on, tap in. Got a thought, let it spin. Call 570-736-9231 or email right in. Y'all heard, pod@gmail.com. Subscribe, leave a review.
Y'all heard?
Okay. 1, 2, 3. Hey, everybody. This is Y'all Heard. A podcast with me, Marissa Phillips.
And me, Pete Phillips.
Are not related.
And this is a podcast that maybe would do better if we stuck to one subject, but we don't because we're curious people. So we tell you about stuff that's piquing our interest lately.
In other words, we tell you things you didn't know you needed to know. I forgot the word words.
It's happening.
I was listening to someone promoting their podcast today, and they promoted it as a podcast you do while you're doing something else. And I'm sad we didn't think of that first. So how are you?
This past week, I saw a duck crossing the street with a duckling.
Mm-hmm.
Like 4 blocks away from any water.
Ooh.
Yeah.
World travelers.
Yeah, they jaywalked, and I was like,
and you're like, fuck you.
So you better be careful out there, guys.
Did you give him a ride?
No, I kind of did want to.
Yeah, I could imagine you would. Okay.
That's about it, really.
Okay. Well, I'm doing great because I just saw Backrooms for the second time, and it was just as good as I wanted it to be. However, I will say, if you, like me, like Backrooms, and you're curious if you should see the new extended cut with 16 minutes of post-credit scenes, only
it's
if
at
you're
the
obsessed.
End?
Yeah, it's the exact same film. It's just a 60-minute post-credit scene.
Wow.
Only see that if you're obsessed with Backrooms, like me. If you're not obsessed with it, you'll be like, why did they do this?
You'll be like, why did I just spend $12 to see 15 minutes?
Yeah. I liked it. I didn't care. I liked Backrooms enough. Mm-hmm. It was for me. Anyway.
Icebreaker.
Marissa, you just got in from seeing Backrooms for the second time. If you could hear me out, I know that this isn't the right word, but if you could host your own liminal space as part of a storefront, like in that movie, what store would you choose and where would the entrance be?
I'm sorry. So I own a store that is a gateway to a liminal space. I'm not hosting the liminal space.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, when you said hosting, I thought you meant like I am a host. You mean like I am, like my store holds the liminal space. I wasn't arguing semantics with you. I just misunderstood what you said.
This pisses me off because I had an answer earlier.
Let's have a lot of dead air you could cut out while we both think. Jerky store. And I just want to be just the back room, just where you keep the extra jerky. Duh.
Wow.
That's it. Simple.
Okay. Mine's going to be a clothing store of any kind, but one that has one of those circular racks.
Yeah. It's going to be in the middle of the racks.
That's how you get in. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So
it's mostly just taking children.
Okay. Fair. Can I, I guess if I wanted to make mine more exotic, I would be like, oh, you get there by opening up a bag of the teriyaki gator jerky. But no, it's just in the back room.
Yeah.
Yep.
Points for creativity.
You made this up before. Oh, I keep forgetting I told you I was going to see back rooms. I was like, you made this up without knowing I was seeing back rooms? we were talking about it. Me and my brother were talking about it in the car, and then the Lyft driver was like, what movie did you see? And I was like, Backrooms. And they were like, what's that about? And I was like, no. I was like, it defies explanation, but it's sort of horror, but it's also like alternate reality. So my brother's like, no, it's that. And then I was like, I don't know.
So I got a question for you. Since you are the resident expert, Can you have liminal spaces in nature?
Ooh, this is
I Googled it, and some people were saying, well, unoccupied nature is just nature.
Yeah. I'm going to go with my own personal internal lore and say no.
Okay.
Yep.
Internal lore.
Yep. As an enthusiast of endless mall and pool rooms, if you know, you know, I would like to say no. Okay, let's move on.
I see what you're saying, but I also feel like...
I mean, I'm not saying that's where it ends and begins, but I'm just saying, like, all my liminal spaces are definitely, like, human-made.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if it's unending space, again, I guess that's nature.
That's just nature, yeah. An unending motel room and an unending forest are not the same.
But I do feel like if you were walking through a forest and then you came upon a clearing that was creepy in some way, it could feel like a liminal space.
I guess if you went into a forest and you went one way and then you backtracked and every part of that forest changed as you were backtracking, you could argue there's a liminal space, but somehow it's not as interesting.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
fight today, me if you disagree. 570-PODWAD1.
Today we are going to talk about three men who are connected to one town and a bit of nature.
Okay.
That was my transition.
Human nature?
I mean, isn't everything related to human nature?
True.
So first we're going to learn about Clifford Griffin. And he was born in 1847 in England. So we're going quite a ways back.
Okay.
He was the younger brother of Heneage Mackenzie Clifford.
Mm.
Heneage.
I like that.
Who journeyed to America to get into the mining business. But Clifford wasn't inclined at first anyway. He stayed in England for a little while. Some say he blew his inheritance on debauchery.
Wow. I really wish that's how you thought you said it.
On booze and women.
Okay.
Eventually, though, he decided to venture to America, and he was in New York, and he was set to marry. But on the eve of his wedding, his fiance died suddenly, but from natural causes. Mm-hmm. Nothing suspicious.
I'm sorry, but what kind of natural causes?
It's the 1800s. They didn't really.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Okay.
Could be like anything.
Yeah.
So that's when he goes, I guess I'm going to go out to Colorado, meet up with my brother in Silver Plume, Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
By this point, Heneage, the older brother, did I get that right?
Yes.
Yes. No, Heneage is, yes, you're right. Okay. By that point, Heneage was a successful mine operator. So Clifford was basically poised to be the same. He operated the 7:30 mine, which was named that because employees started at 7:30 a.m. And most other mines started at 6:30 a.m. So
yeah,
people like
7:30 seems hella late for the 1800s.
People liked starting work at 7:30, I guess.
Yeah.
And the Silver Standard in 1887 said that he was a man who never had an enemy, but was always kind and ready to make friends with every class with whom he came in contact.
What the hell is the Silver Standard?
Yeah, that was a newspaper.
Okay.
About silver. The silver industry.
Okay, okay.
I did some really primary source research.
Ooh, nice.
I guess that's not a primary source, right? I would have to talk to the person who said that.
Yeah, close enough.
So Clifford lived by the mine, and he would play violin off of a cliff. I shouldn't say off of a cliff, on a cliff. He would stand on a cliff. He would play the violin, and it would resound...
Sorry, that took a moment to be funny to me. And I know
it was like when they had sex on a cliff in what, Underworld?
Oh, yeah.
Half of you has to be off of the cliff. All right, so he would play the violin on a cliff and it would resound off the mountains that were, you know, surrounding the area.
Yeah.
And depending on accounts that you read, one day the violin stopped and then there was a gunshot and Clifford Griffin fell into the hole he dug for himself where he would, which is, I guess, sorry, which is near the place that he would play the violin.
And so there, go ahead.
And there he would remain. His brother would erect a monument in the spot to memorialize his brother, a monument that can be seen from miles around and is still up today. Some people say that you can still hear the violin playing over the breeze on certain nights.
So he killed himself?
The Register Call, which is in Georgetown, Colorado, reported it a little bit differently. They said Griffin was found dead in bed with a bullet hole through his head, which is cool for a newspaper to have that many rhymes.
Yeah.
At present, writing at the time, everything points to a clear case of suicide, but nothing has yet developed to show cause for such a rash act. He was 35 years of age, which is what they say, but he was actually 39 or 40.
Wasn't that old as shit at that point?
I guess so.
Yeah, okay.
We're old as shit, Marissa.
Not at this time.
The location of his burial and monument are real, but the rest about did he shoot himself, you know, that stuff is up in the air.
Okay.
Was it his unending grief of losing his fiance that made him just kill himself one day? That was the straightest line to a conclusion, so that's what the coroner's report says.
Got it, okay.
And Hennage, the younger brother, really older. Trying to get this. packed up a few years later and went back to England. So that's just a little bit about Clifford.
Okay.
In 1969, Tom Young moved to Silver Plume. So get out your notebooks if you're trying to keep track of everybody, but we're not going to talk about Clifford again, so don't worry about that.
Why the fuck did we do that?
I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Tom Young moved to Silver Plume, Colorado, same town, where he went on to operate a bookstore that was in the town. Now, when Clifford Griffin was alive, there might have been 900 people in town, but yeah. By the time 1970 rolled around, there was 164, according to census data.
Okay.
Because it was a mining town, so obviously when there was things to be mined, there were a lot of people there. So on one hand, I could see it being really hard to make a living off of a bookstore in a town 100%. Of 160 people.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
But when you consider that it's the 70s and there's probably not much else to do.
Yeah, that's true.
I guess you can. In 1987, Tom was 47 years old and living with his trusty companion, Gus, a black Labrador who never left his side. And he lived on Pendleton Mountain. Not on the top of the mountain like a guru would live. Okay. But he lived on the mountain somewhere in a cabin.
Got it.
So around this time, Tom was talking with people about maybe taking a trip to Europe. So when he disappeared, nobody really thought much of it until like 3 weeks later where they were like, he would be back from vacation by now.
Yeah.
Nobody seemed to be concerned about Gus, though. Like, they just thought he was up there, I don't know, running the house and feeding himself.
Okay.
And I don't know how you would take a Labrador on vacation to Europe in the 80s. Maybe it was possible, but that's like an 8 to 12 hour plane ride, depending on where you're headed.
Yeah.
But anyway, Tom and Gus were gone. Poof. September passed. This was in August. So September passed, as did a Rocky Mountain winter, but there was no sign of Tom. Nobody knew what happened. He's an adult, so there's probably only so much that police can do.
Mm-hmm.
But there was certainly an air of mystery from a man who just closed up his shop one day a little early and then disappeared.
Yeah.
There was no messages to anyone. There was no clear explanation for his customers, for example. No leads in a case or anything like that. And at the end of July 1988, Tom Young's remains were found by a couple of hunters who were scoping out the area on Republican Mountain. Now, this is in the opposite direction from Silver Plume than Pendleton Mountain, where he lived.
Okay.
Try to remember that, but I'll remind you later.
Thank you.
So Tom and his dog were bones by July. because there's a lot of predators.
Yeah, okay.
But there was a revolver near the bodies, a few feet away. The bullets, however, that were in nearby, I guess, the casings, whatever, could not be traced to the revolver simply because the gun was too rusty from the wear of 9 months of weather.
Okay.
So some people kind of really lean on that and say, well, there was nothing matching the bullet to that gun, so somebody else could have killed him.
But people want us to believe he committed suicide.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Ted
Parker, doesn't murder suicide with their dog.
Yeah, and there's a lot of debate online among people who cover this story about whether if you were going to commit suicide, you would shoot your dog or not.
and
I just find it to be a very funny like thing to argue about.
What is the argument for that?
That your dog wouldn't, like, I guess, have an owner or be able to take care of itself. Out there, it could get eaten by a bear. So I better just shoot it in the head.
Oh, yeah, because you couldn't possibly drop it off somewhere then kill yourself. Lazy bitch.
Yeah, but... And then the case against is obviously you love your dog so much, you couldn't shoot it in the head.
Yeah.
And also you have a revolver that you just happen to bring out that has two bullets in it, only two bullets.
he likes to live on the edge. He thought it would be poetic.
So Ted Parker was a guy who lived in town, and he rented the shop that Young's store was in, the bookstore. Okay. He's the connective tissue that brings us to Keith Reinhardt, which is the guy who brought me into this particular story. Keith and Ted, the guy who was renting the shops and seemed to work on different properties in the area, they used to live across the street from one another when they were kids. Okay. Keith lived in a suburb outside of Chicago, so nowhere near Colorado. He wrote for the Daily Herald covering high school sports. In December of 1987, you can find an article that Keith wrote about Ted, and apparently Ted was notable in the area that they grew up in because he had several accolades for wrestling.
But I was just going to say that a living of writing about high school sports sounds horrible, but then I realize it's really judgy of me, but know that that's what I was thinking.
You're not alone.
Yeah, okay.
But, yeah, some people speculate, you know, like that somebody who likes writing about that job likes to sort of like spot talent and try to call it out early, you know, be the first person to see. So
you could have won a darker direction there, but good on you for not.
So, yeah, he wrote this article about Ted, and the story referred to Ted at that present time that he was living in Silver Plume, where he was restoring buildings and trying to breathe new life into the small town. In the story, he mentions Tom Young's disappearance. Okay. Quote from the story. This past summer, another good friend of Ted's, who had leased one of Ted's storefronts to operate a bookshop, disappeared. But life is a little different, a little harder, a little less forgiving in the mountains. Tragedy is met with much more tolerance. Which is rough.
Yeah, like it doesn't have to be, but okay.
Yeah. So Keith was nearing 49 years old when in 1988, he decided to take a sabbatical from work. What? You could just do that?
I've heard multiple cases of people doing that. No idea how the fuck that happens, but
this guy took a 90-day sabbatical from work, which sounds like a dream come true.
I know.
How much of your job would you forget how to do in 90 days? But again, I guess if you are a writer, you don't really lose that, you know, as long as you're using it. And that was the idea. He was going to follow his passion and write a novel. And his friend Ted Parker said, there's no better place.
Someone a sabbatical for that.
Yeah. There's no better place for you to get some peace and quiet to work on your novel than in Silver Plume, Colorado.
And in the mountains that are unforgiving or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
Somebody said, okay.
So that's where Ted went. He left his wife of 2 or 3 years behind. After all, it was just 90 days. It wasn't forever.
Did and The Shining come out yet?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, well, if you don't learn your lesson, that's on you.
Some couples spend gaps of time apart like that without any issues, especially if one of them needs to stay home and actually work to hold down a job while the other is out writing and dreaming.
Yeah.
In that same article, Keith mentioned how Ted Parker collected antiques. So it's not really surprising that Ted set up Keith with an antique shop in the same exact space that Tom Young's bookstore was in. So he's operating a little antique store there in town. And if you thought it was hard to sell books in the 80s, imagine selling antiques in the 80s.
Yes, yeah.
Meanwhile, Keith grew fascinated with Tom Young's story. He ended up making a character for his novel that he was working on named
Tom Young.
Guy Gypsum.
What a... Okay, that's really stupid. And two... Wait, is that supposed to be related somehow?
No.
Oh, you said it like it was.
It's just a dumb name.
Yeah, okay.
And like, do you think it would reflect the character? Like, oh, guy likes to gypsum, you know?
Oh, well, gypsum, isn't gypsum a, some sort of...
Oh, is it a thing?
I think it's a, let me see, I think it's a stone. Also, you're not allowed, oh, it's a soft
natural. I know.
Yeah, okay, as long as you know. No, yeah, it's a mineral.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
And you're surrounded by like mining and mountains. All right, maybe that would.
I used to be a rock club, guys.
When?
When I was a child.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good on you for keeping that knowledge.
Yeah.
So Guy Gypsum was a composite of himself and Tom Young.
Okay.
So he came up with his character and he sat down to begin his manuscript. There is so much stuff that's unknown there, and you have like a world of possibilities to work with if you're writing the story of Tom Young, because nobody knows what happens.
Yeah.
But sometimes when you have too much to work with, you need to have filters to like narrow things down a bit, like for where you should start.
Yeah.
Keith's daughter, Tiffany, told Unsolved Mysteries, writers like to live the story they're writing about, get a feel of it, so it's easier for them to write about it.
So what is that saying?
Well.
So he's going to kill himself?
On August 7th, in 1988, Keith disappeared. He closed his antique store early at 2:30 p.m., which is not the same time that Tom Young closed his store.
Yeah.
And he started up the mountains with just jeans and a flannel shirt. Of course he had shoes on.
Okay.
But that is the way that people say it. Just jeans and a flannel shirt. Somebody said tennis shoes, if that does anything for you. Yeah. So some people say that he was partying the night before until 4 a.m.
Where are you partying in the mountains with 100 people?
They say that he was at a party and he was talking to some woman.
What is this, Widow's Bay?
So somebody thinks, ooh, maybe he ran off with the woman. Some people say that he was hungover. Some people say that he was hungover, so like he wasn't in any good shape to be climbing mountains. And some people say, too, that he was talking the night before about visiting West Virginia. So there are like four things right there that I don't think really affect what's going on.
How far is he from West Virginia?
They're in Colorado, so pretty far.
Sure, fuck.
Yeah. But like people talk about these few things, like that he could have been hungover. He was talking to a woman and he was talking about West Virginia and they're like, yeah, so he must have run off to West Virginia, or yeah, he must have run off with that woman, or yeah, he must have run off with hangover.
We're all free. So yeah.
But everything aside, Keith was gone. He told several people that he saw on his way out of work and down the street, that he was going to climb Pendleton Mountain. And if you recall, that is where Tom Young lived. Yeah. It's not where his remains were found.
Okay.
So personally, between that and the quote from his daughter, which I agree with, that sometimes writers want to feel the story and feel the atmosphere, that sort of thing. So I think he might have been going that way for some like situational inspiration. Like if I can find where Tom Young used to live, or I can get an idea for the woods that were around him, maybe it'll get me going with the story.
Yeah.
Now, considering that they had found a skeleton of Tom Young a week or so prior to him disappearing, to Keith disappearing, there wasn't any real messing around this time. They called in rescue teams consisting of 125 people. Now, you might recall that's
almost everyone in the entire fucking town.
Yeah, they were from Alpine Rescue, so they weren't necessarily from the town.
Oh, okay.
They brought in a dozen trained dogs, helicopters, and at least one small plane. And we know that there was one small plane because the plane flew too close to the mountain and crashed, which killed the pilot, Terry Leedens, which triggered the end of the search.
Oh, so just because someone died, they decided to not try and find the other guy?
You know, in a practical way, Marissa, I think, well, you go, okay, so we're looking for one guy. And we just lost one guy. So we're down two guys now. Let's just call this a wash.
Yeah, I mean, I guess.
But, yeah, and it's August, so I don't think there's like super dangerous conditions in terms of like snow or ice or anything like that. That would.
Yeah.
But, Unsolved Mysteries, which is where I first saw the story, says that in 30 years of operation, the Colorado Alpine Rescue Teams at the time had found every single person they searched for, but they discovered no trace of Keith Reinhardt.
Mm.
Also from the show, some have concluded that Keith Reinhardt and Tom Young were murdered, noting that both men rented the same space to run their shops. Perhaps they came across some information that someone didn't want them to know.
Okay, that is making up stuff. The CIA? Like what?
You're going to be impressed. One person in the comments speculates that this is one of those things where like something happens to you in your family and you just start to like put it on everything else.
Yes.
One person says, did they check the CO2 readings in the building that they were working on? Because sometimes people are disoriented from carbon monoxide poisoning and maybe these two guys just wandered off and they were like, you know, poisoned by carbon monoxide.
But there was just guns near the one, wasn't there? Yeah, okay. He walked into the carbon monoxide with his guns. All right.
So, like I said, I saw this story on Unsolved Mysteries. I watch Unsolved Mystery reruns all the time on Pluto TV. And there was something about this story that really fascinated me because of them rent. I think it was just the way that the story was pitched. It's like they rented the same place. They disappeared in the same way. They didn't say anything about Clifford, but if you might recall, Clifford shot himself in 1987.
Yeah.
And allegedly Tom Young also may have shot himself in 1987.
Oh, okay.
And Keith Reinhardt is a little off.
Yeah. Okay.
So the Travel Channel did this show. Anyway, I was looking for all sorts of stuff and when you're in this business as long as Marissa and I have been.
Are we in the business? That is debatable.
You sit down and you listen to a podcast about a topic that you know a little bit of something about and you get a little frustrated when they just tell you all the same shit you already know.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, podcast didn't really do it. It was just people bringing in speculation and their opinions, that sort of thing. But once upon a time, the Travel Channel did a show that was called Lost in the Wild. And they had an episode about this and it aired in 2020. I kind of wonder if the Travel Channel was like, COVID, we really need to come up with some stuff to put on TV. Because it's not really like the greatest show in the world.
Yeah.
But so where was I? Oh, in it, Sheriff Steve Gremillion said when the I guess hosts, co-hosts of the show asked, he said that there had been many skulls found in the mountains, but they had no reason to believe that any of them were Keith's.
Why?
And I'm sure that it's kind of easy enough to narrow things down. Like if you look at a skull, there's probably a way you can tell the age or something like that, but there's absolutely no explanation as to why there are many skulls in the woods.
Yeah.
They also hit upon a theory that there's a serial killer in the town, but there's nothing to go on for that.
Ooh, I would love that. That few people and some of the serial killers. Right. I love that one.
And if there is one, I think it's Ted Parker. He's the guy. He's the guy who rented them both the space.
Yeah. Oh! Ooh, I like that. Yeah.
But in I guess more realistic but also sad news, Tom Parker's house burned down, I think within the past few months.
Oh.
And the whole town of Silver Plume got behind him to raise money and find him a place to live. I think he raised a lot of money on like GoFundMe or whatever they are. I don't know where I was going with that. So in this show, they brought a psychic who has an IMDb page, so you know she's legit.
Oh, yeah.
And the way that she channels spirits is she does free writing. So she just starts writing.
Oh,
and
no one does that anymore.
And the spirits talk through her.
Bad that they do.
She knew details about the case, but they had never told her any details about the case.
Oh, were they publicly known?
But she knew she was going to Silver Plume. And if you Google Silver Plume mystery, this is the only thing you're going to find. Oh,
that doesn't mean anything.
But she said upon, you know, after knowing things about the case specifically, she said that Tom's soul visited Keith in visions and Tom Young was killed because he knew too much about illegal activities in the area. Specifically,
there are 100 fucking people. There's not like a fucking mafia.
Specifically, he knew about illegal activities in the mines.
Like what?
For all you could think of, Marissa, I don't think you'd come up with this, but Tom Young had military experience, you know, before he lived in Silver Plume, working with nuclear weapons. And there are rumors that there was illegal dumping of nuclear materials happening in the abandoned mines.
Oh.
Auto mechanic Roger Holman said that he saw suspicious activity late one night / early one morning. He saw clean cut men come up in really chunky wheeled vehicles. If you'll let me move on from that, he didn't say that, but I did. He saw these clean cut men put on radiation suits and they took something into the mines. Anything? Okay.
No, I don't believe him. Also, I don't know. Continue.
Well, what I would say is if you killed Tom Young because he knew about this, why wouldn't you have killed the mechanic too?
That's fair. Very fair.
The mechanic is the guy who told Tom Young about it.
Very, very, very fair.
But the mechanic is alive and well, at least he was in 2020, because he is in the episode kind of staring at the host dead-eyed while they ask him questions.
Yeah.
The host of the show then decided to go into the mine in question, the one where he saw activity.
Is he dead?
And they found inside of it high levels of radiation.
Ooh.
So they brought this radiation detector with them and they set this limit where they said, if this thing hits 100, we need to turn around and go back.
Okay.
So it hits 100, but you know, they're kind of like,
they're like, let's go further.
Like we're only dancing around 100. Let's go a little bit deeper, see what we can find. And then it starts going up super fast and it gets to 400. Now, I don't know what any of this stuff means, but that's what happens in the show. In the end, the hosts disagree on what happened. One thought that Keith ran off and that Tom shot himself. The other one thought that Tom was murdered and that Keith was eaten by bears or something.
What do you mean by ran off?
That he wanted to start a new life and he left everything behind. He left his wife behind. He left his kids behind.
What is their proof?
They don't have any proof against it.
You could have done a billion things.
Yeah.
Okay, fair.
Now, this sounds a little too convenient, but two hikers that were shooting film for a documentary, a short documentary about the town of Silver Plume, which really has no dialogue or anything. It's mostly just like visuals of an old mining town.
Okay.
They allegedly found Keith's wallet in the woods while they were shooting film for a documentary.
Okay.
Which, of course, led them to starting to make a documentary about Keith Reinhardt.
Yeah, of course. Okay.
And you can't really find any concrete details that happened. There is a documentary, though, about him that has been in production for, not joking, 15 years now.
Oh, wow. Okay. Why? Because the filmmakers keep dying off?
The filmmakers, I think, keep getting pulled into directions that will actually generate income for them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. One guy's like a director of... I don't know. You have better taste than I do. So maybe you've never even dipped into like a quote unquote documentary about like a local cryptid or something like that.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Where they just kind of interview some people from the neighborhood, ask them about the cryptid, and then they cut it into a documentary that doesn't really answer any questions, but poses some.
Absolutely not. Those things annoy me.
So. Keith spent about 2 months in Silver Plume. That's it. He wrote two chapters of his planned novel. And in a way, yeah, maybe he was still in vacation mode from leaving his normal life at home.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he was still like drinking and partying until 4 a.m. But like Marissa said, where are you partying at 4 a.m. in Silver Plume?
Yeah, I live.
Though for all we know, the whole town could be up at 4 o'clock in the morning. It could just operate on a different time schedule than the rest of the world.
I guess. All I know is I live in a small town, but it's bigger than Silver Plume, and there ain't nothing open even till 2 a.m.
Yeah. And Ted owns the area, like, cafe/diner/eatery. Mm-hmm. So he would have, I don't know, maybe they had a thing there. Again, I don't want to speculate, guys.
Why not? That's all anyone is doing in this entire
game. Speaking of speculation, Bigfoots have been spotted near Silver Plume.
Oh, Bigfoots with guns?
There have been no significant UFO reports in the area, though.
Okay.
When the hosts of Lost in the Wild tried to retrace Keith's potential steps climbing Pendleton Mountain late in the day, they found the terrain very unstable. There were some cave-ins. They found some really deep holes, like the ground giving way underneath them. And when they realized that Keith would have been up there in the dark and it was raining and it was already kind of slippery, they decided to stay where they were. And they slept in shifts and they heard growls in the darkness.
Ooh.
Could have been mountain lions, could have been bears, could have been whatever.
Yeah.
Some true crime podcasts make Keith sound like he was having a midlife crisis and he just, yeah, wanted to leave his old life behind. Some paint him as a dreamy doofus who didn't prepare to go climbing. Like he just went out and thought he could climb a mountain in a few hours.
I'm going dream doofus.
Some make him seem like a man who was so disappointed that his novel subject wasn't as mysterious as he thought. Like, he thought that there would be some mystery behind Tom Young's disappearance, but once they found his body, a week later, Keith disappears. So some people have speculated that he was so depressed that they found his body. He just wandered off into the woods to die. I don't know.
That's too dramatic and stupid.
Yeah. And some make him sound like a lonely guy who was just generally depressed, because I guess that's easy to put together.
Yeah.
If you're a man, yeah. I mean, if you're a human, you get lonely sometimes.
The male loneliness epidemic, right?
I don't really know what to think, except that if he died in the woods, it was probably a very horrible death.
Yeah.
Regardless of what happened, I'd like to issue a warning to everybody who hears this to not visit Silver Plume in 2087. because that is when we'll find out if this is a recurring curse that happens every 100 years.
Yeah.
Or just a coincidence.
Also, don't let yourself fall prey to the male loneliness epidemic.
Yeah. It's very easy.
Yeah.
That's why we listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
So Marissa, any
friendships?
Any thoughts or feelings before we move on?
What do you think happened?
I don't know. I really wish there were like tapes of interviews or something with him so that you could get a feel for his personality.
Yeah.
But there's just pictures of him and he looks like a jovial guy, but it's also the picture that they ran in the newspaper with all of his articles. So of course he has to look happy in that picture.
Oh yeah. Yeah. What's his name again?
Keith Reinhard.
Oh, I got it. Aw. Now I feel worse because he does look jovial.
Yeah. And he had some kids. He was clearly divorced or widowed. I don't know, but his, and he had a new wife of a couple of years. His kids go, no, why would my dad ever do that? Why would he ever run away and leave us all behind? His wife the same. His wife was actually scheduled to visit him the weekend after he went missing. So again, if you want to rely on that, he's just miserable in his life and he wants to run away. I better get out of here before my wife comes. But then why would you invite your wife out at all? Like,
maybe his wife came out earlier.
And
that's
killed
her alibi. Yeah. That's my guess.
So yeah, I don't really know what happened. Okay. And perhaps we'll never know. But if they make that documentary, I will watch it.
Yeah, that sounds kind of interesting. I'd watch it too.
Because they seem to have access to some things like that, you know. I think they have the two chapters of the book, which is something I would really like to read, just, you know, just for fun.
Oh, yeah.
But on their website for the documentary, they have police reports, which I read through, and I looked for a few, like, newspaper articles and things like that. So, but the website also is biased in a way because it is making it try to sound like a super complex mystery or something like that, you know.
Okay.
Because you want people to watch your documentary. I get it.
What did I say? This is slightly unsatisfying because I wanted to find out it was a serial killer all along.
Yeah.
So, boom.
Maybe it was. I'm telling you, I was really suspicious of Ted Parker.
Yeah.
And then when I Googled him to see what he was up to today and found out that his house burned down, I felt bad. So he was immediately acquitted.
Yeah, okay. Aw. Yeah, I don't know. There's nothing that screams like, oh, that must be the real thing to me. Yeah. I don't know. That was cool, though.
Thanks. Plugs. You have anything you'd like to plug, Marissa?
I'd like to plug the back rooms till everyone in my circle has seen it.
For the fifth week in a row?
Yep. I want everyone to see it so that we could all talk about back rooms. How about you?
Maybe we should have like a special Patreon thing where we have a big Zoom call and we all have back rooms as our backgrounds.
Oh, fuck yeah. I like it.
All right. So this is the thing, guys. I'm actually heading to New Jersey next week and I'm kind of, I'm plugging this so that you can do this instead of me because I won't be able to. I'll be at my mom's house and my mom doesn't like scary things at night. So
she likes scary things in the morning.
She could tolerate semi scary things during the day.
Okay.
And she finds the Lifetime channel scary. So
that's funny.
On the Lifetime this Friday. So I guess the day this is coming out on the Lifetime movie network, there's going to be a movie called My Daughter's Trapped in a Thruple. I'm so pissed. I'm going to miss it.
Oh my God. What is she trapped in a thruple?
I'm so pissed. I'm going to miss it.
What the fuck is this about?
I don't know. I mean, I assume it's about a daughter who's in a thruple.
You didn't watch a trailer? Because how are you trapped?
No, Marissa. You don't understand. They don't make trailers for these movies.
Oh, they don't?
Sometimes they do for like the big ones. But when they premiere on the Lifetime Movie Network, which is secondary to the Lifetime channel, they're not making any. Yeah.
Do I need a subscription to watch that?
Not if you have like regular cable.
Okay.
I mean, it's part of my regular cable package. Now, the next night, the Lifetime channel, not the Lifetime Movie Network, is going to be showing Crowning at the Prom, which, yes, Marissa, they do have a trailer for. And it is about a prom queen who is pregnant at the prom.
Something about that title seems real gross.
And, she's a teenager and she's like, I shouldn't be pregnant. Oh my God, I'm going to pretend I'm not. But then at the prom, it looks like something happens. The following weekend, I think I'm going to be home in time to watch Girl in the Coffin. So,
is this your main pastime?
Yeah.
Okay. No judgment.
So, just putting all those out there for you so that you can, if you're like, I wonder what Pete, nobody was wondering this. I wonder what Pete would be doing on a Friday night. Watch My Daughter's Trapped in a Thruple.
I mean, that one actually sounds promising. Yeah. I don't know about a trapped in a coffin. Been there, done that. Am I right?
They've had Girl in the Box, Girl in the Coffin, Girl in the Basement, Girl in the, what was the one thing that they were using? It was like a synonym for basement. But I was like, wait a minute, what is that?
Den? Entertainment room? Subterranean level?
It was Girl in the Cellar. And I couldn't make the connection that the cellar was underground. I thought the cellar was like not underground. And I know that in every single tornado movie, when they go to the cellar, it's underground. But I just couldn't make the connection. Why? I'm like, this girl's in a hole in the ground. Why are we calling this a cellar?
Maybe you were just equating it with like a wine cellar.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Thanks, yeah. Marissa. Thanks for
saving
me.
You're welcome. Guys,
Marissa,
what
if somebody wanted to call us?
They could call us at 570-POD-1.
Yes, they could.
Email us.
YallHeardPod@gmail.com.
Patreon?
Patreon.com/YallHeard. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. What if they wanted to slide into my DMs in a non-sexual manner?
Ooh, I don't know if I should be telling people that. Maybe you should.
Okay. You could go into my Instagram at RissVandal. Right? Yeah. Sorry. You'd think we hadn't done this podcast for a while because I don't remember anything. Thanks for listening, guys, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye. Yeah, hi.